Okay, back into open session. Mr. Kearney, you want to give us a report, please?
We went into closed session. Is this on?
Yes. You might have the low volume, though. I'm sorry.
Okay. We went into closed session with 12:20 and came out at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
No reportable action.
Thank you. Okay, we'll get back to our public hearing. We are somewhere. We have a presentation by correspondence, Wendy?
Yes, I do.
Record?
I do. Okay, since this was continued and first actually heard or started to be heard back on March 21st, the clerk has received correspondence from a Sherry Whitmore with NOAA Fisheries, Sharna Gilmore in the total of 11, it looks like, emails, correspondence. Michael Stapleton, it looks like 6 of those came in. Paul Buchter, Scott Valley Fire Protection District, Mary Rorich, Dee Jones, Melinda Perlman, we got a couple of those. Linda Branson, Pete Morrell, David Chilcott, Dana and Bob Ayers, Pam Malmberg, Dave Nelson, Brenda Phillips, Ann Marsh, Scott Eastman, Karen Resch, also Betsy Stapleton, Marsha Birch, Glenn Pearson, and this morning we received 2 emails, 2 letters connected to those emails as well from a Jennifer Buckman with Barkowitz, Chronic, and Shanahan Law Firm. None at lunch, so I believe that's all I've received.
So we're clear on that. Okay, so we're at the presentation of reports, arguments, or evidence by staff of other county departments or public agencies. We're good, Lynn? We're good on that part?
I haven't received any of it here.
We'll get to proponents' arguments. We have a proponent. Who might have to be someone online?
Showing online.
Sure about that? Give that a minute. Yep.
Not online at
this time. Opponents' arguments? So we'll skip all the rebuttals. I don't see any rebuttal by either one. This will be a continuation hearing, right? So we don't close the hearing.
The hearing won't be closed for the ordinance, but I believe part of the motion is a resolution related to the use permit.
Through the chair, I recommend with respect to adopting the resolution and certifying the EIR, the board is going to do that at the second meeting, right after having adopted the ordinance, the second meeting of the ordinance, if that's what the board decides.
Okay. Everyone help me get to wherever we got to go. I want to go back. Is there any proponents' arguments?
Excuse me,
not public comment.
Public comment will come up, please.
People in support.
There we go. There's a public proponent's argument. Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. Am I?
Are you a proponent for the?
I am trying to speak for the proponent. Yes, the
and
project
you are,
proponent.
You are, please.
Jennifer Buckman with Barkowitz, Chronic, and Shanahan on behalf of Mount Hermon Association.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, thank you. And I wanted to start off by thanking Ms. Lang and both the experts from OES and CAL FIRE for all the time and thought that they've put into processing the project and the very thorough presentations that they gave today. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of points. As the clerk of the board indicated, we did submit a couple of letters responding to some of the points that had been made in the late filed comments. And then I wanted to highlight a few other points just for the board's consideration. First, there are CEQA time limits for certification of an EIR is adequate. This project, the notice of preparation was issued in 2016, and you had a year from that time until about September of 2017 to certify an adequate EIR. So we're well beyond the timeline now, at more than 5 years later. So we would ask that, the process be completed. Second, part of what is going on with the fire hazards and the CEQA analysis of those is that delaying this approval of this project will actually cause more of an impact to fire safety than approving the project. And that is because under CEQA, you compare the impact of the proposed project to the existing conditions. And the existing conditions is there is an operating camp validly running under an existing conditional use permit that has only one point of ingress and egress from it. If you approve the project, however, the older buildings will be able to be modernized and renovated with using more fire-safe materials in the upgrades. And we will add, as was discussed repeatedly during the presentations, and I won't belabor the point, another point of ingress and egress, thereby making the existing camp safer. So I just wanted to point out that further delay would not be in the best interest of fire safety. There have been a number of comments that have been made about other, that have been made, as the clerk noted, that have come in after the comment periods closed here. And as I noted, we've had a lot of delays with this project. It was first proposed in 2011. So we're 12 years into this. We've had four different environmental public review periods, and yet we are still getting a lot of comments at the last minute here. But as Ms. Lang referred to in her presentation, there are standards for what constitutes evidence under CEQA, that it has to be substantial evidence in the record to support a conclusion. And substantial evidence consists only of facts, reasonable inferences predicated upon facts, or expert opinions that are based on facts. So, for example, a lot of the comments that have been raised about fire safety, they are not supported by any expert opinion. And the undisputed evidence in the record from the two experts who have considered it, with both the Office of Emergency Services and CAL FIRE, is that there are no significant fire impacts associated with this project. So we would just note that that's where we are with a lot of these comments, is their comments keep coming in, but that doesn't mean that they meet the CEQA standards of triggering any kind of obligation to do more CEQA review, because there's not substantial evidence in the record of any significant environmental impacts. During the 12 years that this project has been under environmental review, it has undergone a lot of mitigation. As you can see from the proposed findings, we are now to the point where it has been mitigated with the reduced occupancy alternative, to the point where this project will have no significant environmental impacts. And I think Mr. Workin did a great job in his presentation, and you can see how cooperative the camp staff is. There were a couple of questions from the supervisors regarding how the things such as the evacuation plan standards could be enforced. And I would just remind you that this is a proposal for a conditional use permit. The conditional use permit, if approved, has conditions in it that the county itself can enforce, just as the county is able to enforce the mitigation, monitoring, and reporting program that it will adopt as part of the program should it approve the project. And then finally, I would just note for all of you that this project is, as Mr. Workin touched on quite briefly in his remarks, subject to the, it's for a religious land use, right? This is an existing camp that has a religious basis with spiritual elements to it. As such, it is subject to the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. And so the county has to take that into account when considering the project, that zoning can't be applied in a way such as some of the commenters urge, to effectively preclude religious use of or gatherings on the property. It says right there in the project objectives that one of the purposes of this project is to allow the applicant to expand and accommodate more people in its ministry. So it unquestionably qualifies for that federal statute, and it's something that should be taken into consideration when considering the project. We thank you for your time this morning and your consideration and all the thoughtful questions. And we look forward to hoping that we can work with you on implementing a project that will be a good benefit to the community.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll go back to opponent arguments or evidence. Who's the opponent? Who would be the opponent? Well, you're all going to get your chance anyways. We're going to go to...
You had one hand raised.
For sure.
Are you talking about public?
No.
Oh.
I'm not talking about public. Trust me, your public is going to get a chance here. We got a hand raised. Are they an opponent? And before we get there, who would be the opponent of this? Because obviously the public thinks that the ones that are against it would consider themselves opponents. You see, I'm going through the protocol here.
Yeah, I know that's what I'm trying to do. Protocol. Quite frankly, I think it's a gray area.
In my mind, an opponent is someone has a proposal, someone's the neighboring land, you know, there's a lawsuit or there's something.
I would agree. It's a little bit of
it's a little vague.
Yeah.
Maybe we can look at that somewhere down the line. Okay, so I'm not sure. We're going to go to public. Let me pause. I'm sorry, now do we close the hearing on this? What do we do?
Well,
we want to
continue it, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to go right into public comments. Let's start with the person online first.
Caller ending in 2131, it's your turn to speak.
Is it time for me to speak? This is Ann Marsh.
Yes, public comment, Ms. Marsh. 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Look, you didn't give the other person 3 minutes. I'll take as much as I want.
They were the proponent, Ms. Marsh. This is public comment now.
Okay. Scott Valley Area Plan. If there are no concerts, weddings, public gatherings, then this would qualify as a recreational facility. If those are included in the project, then it does not meet the standards of the Scott Valley Area Plan. I noted in my letter, which you may or may have not read, the day-use traffic is not included in this project and therefore nullifies the EIR, we'll go back to the basics. If there's going to be a build out over 20 years, as was suggested for the new numbers, then that needs to be a condition of the use permit, as does a cap on the number of people allowed on the site. Patterson Creek Road needs to be for emergency exit and entrance only, not allowing the public and their guests and employees to use it. And I don't know how the Berean Church is going to accommodate 622 people, and I don't know where those buses are going to be that'll be at the church. Somebody better explain that. The last use permit said campers and students. Many of the volunteers that were included in that 310 number were students, so that baseline that is used is incorrect. I'd hate to be coming out of a driveway from either of my friends' houses on South Kidder Creek Road when the fire departments were trying to get in and the campers were trying to get out. One of their driveways is iffy at best and has always scared the bejesus out of me. And our campers and their parents being disclosed that there is a fire rest here at this camp. I think that was brought up. And are they going to be provided with Nomex in case they have to be out there sheltering in the safe zone or whatever it's going to be called? But it does not meet the Scott Valley Area Plan as long as those events, concerts, weddings, etc. That takes it right into a commercial facility, not a recreational facility, and it does not meet those criteria. The day use traffic was never considered in this project and should be. I attached Mr. Andy Morgan's 2022 evaluation of the camp. And you can see by reading that.
Thank you, Ms. Marsh.
There is so much data.
Okay, thank you. Your hands are up. Tim Lloyd.
And these are in-house now?
In-house.
Thank you.
We'll come back to it. I don't see any hands raised, but we'll come back to it.
I just kind of keep track of each one.
Hello, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I basically wanted to make you aware today of some of the people that are available to speak. I work for Kidder Creek Camp. You don't know, I'm the site manager.
If you would, yes, state your name for the record, please.
Oh, Tim Lloyd.
Thank
for
you.
For Kidder Creek Camp, I'm the site manager.
Okay.
And we do have some people available today. You met Jennifer Buckman already, who is an attorney that's working on CEQA case for us. And then Chris Cummings, who's an engineer that's worked on a lot of this stuff. Glenn Pearson, who's a water expert, is here today. And then online we also had Lauren Chisholm. If you have any questions about traffic, he would be glad to speak to that too. So I just wanted to make you aware of what was available today if you did have questions. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Perlman? Apologize, I can't. My eyes are bad and I can't read as well as I used to.
Sorry, we're all in the same boat.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Linda Perlman. I've lived a mile from the camp for over 30 years. Our group, Keep Scott Valley Rural, represents hundreds of people. On the outskirts of South Kidder, North Kidder, Kellums, Partridge. you're going to set a precedent today with your vote, and it really worries me. I don't envy you making this decision. This is not going to be easy. You've been elected by your constituents, and we put our trust in you that you will protect all of us, not just a portion of us. The most dangerous part of this whole proposal is the loss of life and property. A few meetings ago, one of the planning commissioners, you can guess who maybe, stated that this project is political. Since when is saving lives political? Kidder Creek and Patterson Creek are in the two most extreme places in all of Scott Valley for potential catastrophic fire. We've seen the videos, we've heard from Murray, we know about all the fires last year, and our CEQA lawyer stated in her new letter to you that the CEQA analysis of fire risks will jeopardize the lives of project visitors, nearby residents, as well as state fire resources and personnel. And of course, if it is not, it's not if, but when. What if there is a chaotic evacuation? We fear for our lives. We truly do. This is not a bunch of NIMBYs saying no to something, some other project. This is our lives. My last request is, my last question is, why weren't the neighbors included in your evacuations? What about us? There's not just a few of us on the road. There's a whole subdivision there. We're going to die. Seriously. If any of this goes wrong, and as Andy, as far as all your simulations and everything, you guys have done a great job. It doesn't make me feel secure at all, because nature backs less.
D. Jones.
My name is Dee Jones. I live at 711 South Kidder Creek Road. South Kidder Creek Road bisects my 64 acres, which are located approximately 1 mile east of Kidder Creek Camp and 1/2 mile west of Route 3. nearly 20 years ago when I moved to the banks of Kidder Creek, which also crosses my land for about a half a mile. There were still salmon in the creek in the fall months, and the mountain sides were lush and green. This sadly is no longer the case. The extreme drought coupled with blistering hot summers have drastically impacted creek flow and turned our timber into tinder. Now water is the new gold, and catastrophic wildland fire is on our doorstep. 12 years ago, when we learned that the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp was considering an expansion, we started asking questions. KCOC came to the neighbors with their plan. They were going to build a camp that would be able to entertain 844 campers and staff per day. The idea that a commercial recreational development, nonprofit or otherwise, larger in size than either of Scott Valley towns of Fort Jones or Etna, perched above us in a box canyon was simply inconceivable. Their plans included a 7-acre pond diverted from the Barker Ditch off Kidder Creek, a projected 1,800 cars a day on the narrow, winding road through a residential neighborhood, and the use of 38,000 gallons of well water per day. The plan included no waste management, only septic pits dug in highly granitic soil, and provided no clear title to an easement for their unfinished and inadequate evacuation road. We've kept asking questions. For 12 years later, we're still asking the same questions. The final one being, why in God's name would our county approve a project that blatantly violates CEQA, ignores the Scott Valley Area Plan, does not meet current 4290 Cal Fire regulations, endangers everyone's safety in the face of potential almost certain catastrophic wildland fire, and risks setting a dangerous precedent with regard to water in our drought-impacted valley. I respectfully request that you deny this permit application. To do otherwise seems unbelievably irresponsible.
Thank you.
And incredibly negligent. Thank you.
Jacob Najar? Jacob?
I think he left.
Left, okay. We'll let the bottom piece goes back. Andy Warden?
Andy Warden. Nice to see you again. Just wanted to remind the board of a couple of things. We did not reach out to many of our people to come and show their support today, but I just wanted to remind the board of the wide support that we have had. Obviously, there are some people who oppose our project, but at the first Planning Commission, just I don't know if you heard or if you heard some of the testimony, but we had over 2 hours of testimony from people in support of this project. It was really moving. Also, just want to remind the board that we have addressed all of the concerns, the questions. We've been at this for 12 years, and there have been continued to be more questions that we've had to continue to address. We've had 4 or 5 meetings with the Planning Commission where those things were addressed in great detail, whether it's water, traffic, noise, and ongoing discussions today, I'm sure. But they did unanimously approve the project to you all for approval. There are no significant impacts, and so we would just ask that you would consider those things as you process today. Our objective throughout this whole process has been to be respectful and to work with our neighbors. We are going to continue to be neighbors with them, and we have had good relationship, and we do want that to continue. We do also know that kids need camp. Kids need this. Mental health is on the rise, families are falling apart, and camp is a good thing, a positive thing, and we want to be able to increase what we're doing to make it more attractive so that more kids can come, that they can have their lives transformed. I know that many of you share that, But not only do you share that, but also that you would just look at this long process that we've been through addressing your questions. And so we would just respectfully ask that we would continue to move forward in this long process and come to a conclusion soon. So thank you for all you do, and thank you for your good questions. And I'm here if you have any more.
Thank you. Glenn Pearson.
Yeah, Glenn Pearson. I live at 20840 Live Oak Road in Red Bluff, and I'm the person who wrote the appendices on the surface water groundwater interaction for the EIR. And there's something that when I started this in the year 2020, and I was confronted with, okay, how do I go with this, and how do I keep with the science? Because I wanted to be true to that. And as I went through the aspect of looking at what the documentation was, I looked at the U.S. UC Davis groundwater model. I looked at, as I looked at the data, there were no monitoring wells up in that little corner of the basin. Zero. But fortunately, there were 38 groundwater wells with logs. And that's when I worked for my 36 years with the Department of Water Resources as a groundwater geologist, is I learned to get the most out of those. And in that, I put together a plan and an understanding of the basin. And I also looked at the what was being required as far as groundwater, surface water interactions, how it impacts the fish. But one of the big things I wanted to do is that throughout my career, I watched people who were trying to deceive or people that were just uninformed. They use all kinds of different values. They wouldn't use the same values. And so if you look at my appendix, you'll see that everything is in gallons per minute. So it's a constant number. We're looking at, not we, the proponents, they're looking at putting one additional well in for a grand total between the existing well and their well of 26 gallons per minute. To help you visualize that, that's equivalent to 2 5/8-inch diameter garden hoses. Now, as I outlined in the report, 90% of that water goes back into the septic systems and back into the groundwater supply. So you're even looking at only 3 gallons per minute that you're taking from the groundwater system. And in that, the water is going downstream. In the process of going through all the process, I looked at what the impact of pumping on the other adjacent wells, and that's why I came up with the conclusion that there is no significant impact of the water development that they need for this camp expansion on the existing water supply, nor to the fisheries, nor to downstream water users. And I'm here to answer any questions that you have either today or weeks in the next down the road.
Thank you. Mark Clausen.
Well, my name's Mark Clausen, and I appreciate all you've been doing and keeping track of, but I hope that you'll hold to the data that's been submitted. In other words, there were concerns about if Andy Workin will be there in 20 years. Well, you know, Board of Supervisors change more often than that, and the whole climate can change within your development. So to try to project out 20 years, or for that matter, even 5 years, is a very, very difficult thing to do. But Kidder Creek has been there for 46 years serving the community and doing it in a very positive way. And in no way have they tried to hide things. If anything, this process should show that we have tried to be as upfront, wanting to do the right thing, not trying to hide. The aspect of it not benefiting the people that are already there, well, if this goes through at no cost to the people that are there, there's another access road that wouldn't exist. There's also a greater resource of water that water tender trucks can come to than there is now. As it is now, you could probably go ahead, CAL FIRE could probably fill two trucks, one off the hydrant and one off the pond, without interrupting each other. With the proposed pond that there's there, they could actually bring in a much larger number of tenders and fill right there, as opposed to out in front of CAL FIRE in Fort Jones, where they're lined up waiting while one fills after the other. So in many respects, it serves the community that's there, both on those aspects. And as far as the community for children, you know, we had the probation people here. I mean, one of the biggest problems you have is if you can turn positive aspects in children's lives, which I think we do a great job of. We serve basically the elementary school. The kids come. We serve the junior high and the high schools with different times when they'll come. So it's serving the community, also giving employment to a lot of those young people for the first time. So I hope that you take into account what has been submitted to you, and you look at it upon its merit. And suggestions on how to make things safer, I think we're more than open to. Thank you.
Betsy Stapleton?
Betsy had to go back to work.
Okay.
So she just asked that you read her letter on occupancy. She got some.
Do you have that? It's in the record?
I do, yes. I'll make sure that the board members get those before they leave today.
Michael Stapleton?
Michael Stapleton, I own French Creek Ranch over by Aetna. And I have to say that I'm a Rotarian. We have a camp in Loomis County. We have a camp in Cottage Grove. They call them Camp Rylas. They're 90 and 125, plus 10 to 15% staff. So when I say 844 people, I see a resort, for the Bay Area. I will like to say I gave you guys a copy of the Scott Valley Area Plan. It's protected Scott Valley since 1980, 43 years. All of a sudden, we have some new planning staff, and it's basically been thrown in the trash. I ask you not to throw it away. Cost $20 to make. But I wanted to talk about the staff report that just came out. You have a copy right here. If you look on page 2... I mean, the back page is actually page 20. I just cannot understand why the planning department feels they can just not respect the Scott Valley plan. It is the law. So on this page, she read only agriculture, residential, open. But I'll just say small scale commercial, industrial, recreation, and public or quasi-public uses may be permitted. That's just small scale. The population of Fort Jones is 580. The population of Aetna is 680. How can an entity, I call it a resort town, of 844 be considered a small development? That's crazy. And to put it in this area of just dense, dry pine, low elevation pine and brush, they talked about the fire. They didn't mention a fire at night. A lot of the recent fires are 45 miles an hour plus. The campfire was 75 miles an hour winds. So I just can't imagine trying to get kids out of there. And what happens when they're all scattered over this 500 acres? So then we go back to the... I got a copy here. It's a letter that was in the Scott Valley Area Plan's attachment, letter 6. And back in 1980, the public health department said Greenview prospective developers are all aware that projects within Greenview area should be severely limited due to adverse conditions for sewage disposal. The report was done, and some of the soils are very fast draining. That gentleman over there just talked about how fast draining they are, and that's why there's this restriction, the very poor soils, and the high water. Okay. And so just kind of do one conclusion.
Quickly?
I feel with all these conditions, 25,000 gallons of sewage a day, why did the JH, Aetna, and Fort Jones all have sewage treatment plants? Why aren't they being required to have a sewage treatment plant?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go back to online.
Kilmore, it's your turn to speak.
Battery 100%.
While we're waiting for that, we'll go to Joanna Buck. So I have one more public comment here.
That's the
Hi, I'm Joanna Buck, for the record. And I grew up in Scott Valley, and I've been around the camp for 4 to 6 years since its inception. This has been a special place that was for me as a young child growing up. My parents worked very hard to get me there every summer. The camp often helped me to get there. And I continue to work hard to help my kids get there every year. They don't live in Scott Mill anymore, so they're no longer residents, but it is a positive place that has provided a place of leadership for my kids to develop, a place for them to learn how to work hard, to learn how to volunteer since they were probably about 4 years old. Every year they go and they volunteer at the Fall Festival, where I see people from all over this county come to spend a day with their family outside without the cell phones distracting them, except for maybe taking pictures. And it's a place where kids and families have learned to get out in nature. And I just want to encourage you as a board to think about, we've talked a lot about worrying about the future, and I understand your concerns about worrying about fire risks and what your decision, what risk you're taking in the decision that you make today. But in everything in life, we take a cost and a benefit analysis. We decide, what are the risks that we're taking in this decision that I make? And when you make your decision, I want you to think about the cost and the benefit for youth for the future, not just youth from out of the area that many people have spoken to, but people from this county, people from the community of Scott Valley. Every year there's local day camps that draw, and there's overnight camps that draw from people from this valley and from this county and beyond. And those kids' lives are changed. I see it. I've seen it over the years as I volunteer. I also think that I can understand the neighbors' concerns. I also think that if there was a fire, I'm not going to talk about the science, you guys have all addressed that, but I have seen this community rally around each other. I think that the neighbors and Kidder Creek would work together to get kids out of that place if there was a dire and catastrophic fire. But I've also never, in all the time that I've been around that camp, I've never seen that happen in 46 years. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. We've seen fires, you know, obviously destroy communities, destroy the Klamath River. So I just want to encourage you that the positive impact that this camp can have.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go back to online. Try again, Anna.
Charmaine Gilmore, it's your turn to speak.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay, thank you.
3 minutes,
sorry about
please.
That. My name is Sharna Gilmore. I'm a resident of Etna, California. I just would like to thank you for your time and considering comments along the way. I would like to highlight an issue that Glenn Pearson actually brought up about the groundwater work that he had done in relationship to the EIR. I think one of the things that has not been well vetted at either the staff level or the planning commission level is the idea that all the water necessary from the groundwater is going to be just for domestic use. And the Barker Ditch that I know you guys have spoke about today on many occasions is a very limited water right. It reduces in its CFS, I'm using CFS cubic feet per second, I did not put this into gallons per minute. CFS is generally what's used for irrigation. It diminishes over time to less than a half CFS. When you look at all the aspects that the camp is asking to use water to support, there has not been a reconciliation to address the inability of the Barker Ditch to meet those demands. So the fact that the EIR was predicated on solely relying on the Barker Ditch for groundwater, in my opinion, leaves you, the supervisors, at a difficult position because you have to certify that work is complete and adequate, and it is not. So I would like to also just highlight what Michael Stapleton had said and Gwen Pearson, in that we are going to be taking groundwater, a lot of it, and cycling it through septic systems, which that area has already been deemed by the Siskiyou Health Department as a high porosity area, and water quality downstream is definitely going to be affected. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any more online, Anna?
Showing no others online.
Anyone in-house that would like to speak to the subject?